Okay, you can be opening your Bibles up to Obadiah, if you'd like. Obadiah. We're going to keep pressing on in the minor prophets. As we've said several times, minor really only in length, right? Major message from these prophets. Joel, Amos, Obadiah. And I hate to tell you this, but we're going to cover all of Obadiah tonight. So get ready. Actually, it's only one chapter, 21 verses, I believe. So it's not going to be that bad if we're going to work through the whole book. So it's a pretty short book, 21 verses. Obadiah is a good preacher. He can get his message across in a short amount of time. So I think we all appreciate that for sure. Right now, you know, we're kind of in a political season, and you've probably seen some of those advertisements on television about certain political figures. If you haven't seen them this season, I'm sure you've seen them in the past. One of the things that takes place regularly in these political ads is, I guess, what they call mudslinging, right? So there's not a lot of positive ads, at least generally speaking. A lot of the ads are not, hey, I will do this for you. I will do this. These are my policies. These are my hopes. This is my vision for what I'd like to do in the work, whatever office it might be that I'm running for. We don't see a lot of positive ads. I mean, there are some, but a lot of them are categorized as mudslinging. They are negatively approaching the issue or at least their fellow candidates. We don't see this rule very well applied when it comes to political ads, generally speaking. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7, verse 12, "So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets." In these political ads, in this political season, we don't see a lot of the golden rule played out, right? It's not, I would like this candidate to say these things about me, so I'm going to go ahead and say these kind of things. Or, I think I wouldn't appreciate if someone said this about me, so I'm going to keep that in mind when I talk about someone else or when I talk about these issues. Probably one of the major rules to relationships is that golden rule that Jesus said, do to others what you would have them do to you. Jesus' words. A lot of times we hear that rule in schools or any maybe a secular type of context, not attributing that to Jesus, but it is Jesus who said that. So we see that play out. Now, in Obadiah, what we're going to see is that there was an entire nation who didn't live out the golden rule. And because of that, destruction is coming. Obadiah, like some of the other prophets, speak very plainly, forcefully, and to the point about what is coming on, whether it's Israel and Judah or whether it's the surrounding nations. Obadiah just says it straight out. This is what's coming to you because of your actions, because you didn't treat people like you would have wanted to be treated yourself. So, let's jump into that, giving a little bit of context. Let's jump in to Obadiah, verse 1. It says there, the vision of Obadiah. Okay, let's stop there. We don't know a whole lot about Obadiah. Some prophets, we know a lot about their background, where they grew up, who their family was, different things like that. With Obadiah, it's pretty obscure. Not a whole lot of information is given to us about Obadiah, but we do know that he was a prophet of God that spoke very strongly to the people of God and to others. Continuing on. This is what the sovereign Lord says about Edom. We have heard a message from the Lord. An envoy was sent to the nations to say, rise, let us go against her for battle. Let's stop there. Esau was the founder of Edom. Who was Esau? Esau was the brother of Jacob. And we know that Jacob was later referred to as Israel. So Jacob was sort of a father, a patriarch of the people of Israel. Well, Esau was a patriarch, a founder of Edom. And so what we're going to see throughout the book of Obadiah is Edom and Esau are used interchangeably. We'll see that as we go through this. Edom, this territory of Esau, was south of Judah. It was a mountainous region. Now take note that it was a mountainous region because that's going to come up several times in these 21 verses. Obadiah prophesies that an envoy was sent to the surrounding nations to say, let's go to battle against her. Who's he referring to there? He's referring to Edom. Okay, so we're going to have a question here. A very simple question. Why? Why is it that the nations are being called to go to battle against Edom? Well, let's figure out why. Verses 2 through 9. See, I will make you small among the nations. You will be utterly despised. The pride of your heart has deceived you, you who live in the clefts of the rocks and make your home in the heights. You who say to yourself, who can bring me down to the ground? Though you soar like the eagle and make your nest among the stars, from there I will bring you down, declares the Lord. If thieves came to you, if robbers in the night, oh, what a disaster awaits you. Would they not steal only as much as they wanted? If grape pickers came to you, would they not leave a few grapes? But how Esau will be ransacked and his hidden treasures pillaged. All your allies will force you into this border. Your friends will deceive and overpower you. Those who eat your bread will set a trap for you, but you will not detect it. In that day, declares the Lord, will I not destroy the wise men of Edom, those of understanding in the mountains of Esau? Your warriors, Teman, will be terrified, and everyone in Esau's mountains will be cut down in the slaughter. So Obadiah calls out to the people of Esau, the people of Edom, and he says, watch out. They're coming for you. It's on. And oh yeah, when they come for you, when they come to battle against you, don't expect to win. You are going to be utterly destroyed. This is the word of the Lord going to the people of Edom. Get ready. Ransacked. Pillaged, utterly destroyed. And so we'll ask the question again, why? What did Edom do for Obadiah to prophesy that they are going to be destroyed by the surrounding nations? Why? Okay, 10 through 14. Because of the violence against your brother Jacob, you will be covered with shame. You will be destroyed forever. On that day you stood aloof while strangers carried off his wealth and foreigners entered his gates and cast lots for Jerusalem. You were like one of them. You should not gloat over your brother in the day of his misfortune, nor rejoice over the people of Judah in the day of their destruction, nor boast so much in the day of their trouble. You should not march through the gates of my people in the day of their disaster, nor gloat over them in their calamity in the day of their disaster, nor seize their wealth in the day of their disaster. You should not wait at the crossroads to cut down their fugitives, nor hand over their survivors in the day of their trouble. Okay, so there's kind of a refrain here, right, in 10 through 14. The day of destruction, the day of their disaster, and the day of their trouble. We read it four or five times in verses 10 through 14. What is Obadiah referring to there? Well, it's likely that what Obadiah is talking about is when the Babylonians, as we've mentioned several times already as we've worked through the minor prophets, the Babylonians came into Israel and also Judah to destroy them. When they did that, and this is around 600 BC, even a bit, maybe a little bit later, 586, really through about 535 BC, when they came through to do that, they destroyed them, and then they took the people of Israel and Judah and took them to their own lands. That's when they were in that Babylonian captivity is what we call that. So that's what's taking place. Now, Edom apparently has a connection. First of all, we know that they have a connection with the Israelites, right? Esau and Jacob were brothers. As Israel was being destroyed by the Babylonians, apparently the Edomites watched this happen. They didn't step in to provide any help or care for God's people. Instead, they just watched all of this take place. And so he says, you know, you Edomites, you actually gloated over what took place. You boasted in the misfortune of God's people. It even goes on to say, Obadiah goes on to say, that you had your hand in it. You marched through their gates. You seized their wealth. You cut down their fugitives. The Edomites didn't have any care for them. They didn't step in to say, what can we do to help? Instead, they said, we're going to take part in seeing that Israel and Judah are utterly destroyed. Now, we shouldn't be surprised that Edom felt this way towards God's people. They had a tumultuous past. Yeah, you can read back deeper in the Old Testament when the God's people were in their wilderness wandering, heading toward the promised land. When they ran into the Edomites gave them fits. They didn't say, oh, you're God's people, we're going to help you out, we're kind of kin, let's kind of work through this. They weren't like that at all. In fact, they gave Israel all kinds of problems. In 850 BC, they actually revolted against Judah. So some 200, 300 years earlier, they had revolted against Judah. They were cruel to Israel throughout their history. And so there was a lot of animosity already toward these people. But apparently, when Israel was besieged by the Babylonians, the Edomites watched on and didn't provide any help. In fact, they took part in destroying God's people. So that's why Obadiah is saying, there is destruction coming toward you, Esau. Verses 15 through 18. The day of the Lord is near for all nations. As you have done, it will be done to you. Your deeds will return upon your own head. Just as you drank on my holy hill, so all the nations will drink continually. They will drink and drink and be as if they had never been. But on Mount Zion will be deliverance. It will be holy, and Jacob will possess his inheritance. Jacob will be a fire and Joseph a flame. Esau will be stubble, and they will set him on fire and destroy him. There will be no survivors from Esau. The Lord has spoken. So in verse 15, Obadiah says, as you have done, it will be done to you. As you partook in destroying Israel, now it's coming to you, destruction. Your deeds will return upon your head, Obadiah says. And we know this is justice. Obviously, for the Edomites, they wouldn't have been clapping, saying, yay, we love to hear prophetic messages like this. Destruction is coming our way. Yeehaw. However, think about God's people when they heard this. They saw the Babylonians coming in. They felt that. Also, the Edomites to come in and destroy them. They felt that. And now, for Obadiah to preach a message like this to the Edomites had to have at least helped God's people to feel a little bit better about things. It's important to note here, it's not overt, but it's in there that the one who is going to be doing the battle against the Edomites is God himself. He is the one that's going to avenge for God's people. He is going to be the warrior. This is justice. And justice for God's people is good news. God's providing and protecting His people. God is a jealous God. God who is one who desires to see His people live lives that flourish. And so when other people step in and strive to destroy them, God is a God who doesn't stand out in a distance somewhere. He's completely aware of what's taking place, and He will act on behalf of His people. So they would have heard good news in this message, God's people anyways. Verses 17 and 18, that good news, there will be restoration for God's people. He says, on Mount Zion, there will be deliverance for those who have been fleeing for their life. There is hope, there is rescuing that's going to take place for those who have lost their homeland, for those who have looked people that desire to kill them in the face, in their face. There is good news. There is salvation. There's rescuing coming for His people. God says, Jacob's a fire, Joseph's a flame. But notice what He says about Esau. It's a stubble. It will be burned up by God's people. Verses 19 through 21, the last part of Obadiah's message. People from the Negev will occupy the mountains of Esau, and people from the foothills will possess the land of the Philistines. They will occupy the fields of Ephraim and Samaria, and Benjamin will possess Gilead. This company of Israelite exiles who are in Canaan will possess the land as far as Zarephath. The exiles from Jerusalem who are in Sepharad will possess the towns of the Negev. Deliverers will go up on Mount Zion to govern the mountains of Esau, and the kingdom will be the Lord's. Notice the language of restoration, the language of hope for God's people. There is restoration coming for the faithful remnant. And it says that God's kingdom will expand. Notice it says there at the end, verse 21, deliverers will go up on Mount Zion to govern the mountains of Esau. You see the expansion of God's kingdom? Now, is this a physical kingdom or is this a spiritual kingdom? Is this sort of reaching out to what's going to take place with Jesus Christ, who says the kingdom of God is within you? Perhaps that's what's taking place. There's hope for the people. And God's rule relativizes all other kingdoms. God's rule is absolute and all-powerful. It's a lasting kingdom. So yes, Edom might have caused serious problems for God's people. But Obadiah's message is Esau, Edom, doesn't have the last word. Take heart, my people. There's more coming. We learn a few things about God here. And of course, this is just a quick glance at Obadiah's message. But a few things we learn about God from what Obadiah says here. First of all, God is just. He is thoroughly and completely just. He says Esau will pay for their wrongdoing. Don't worry, Israel. Don't worry, Judah. I've got this. I will take care of you. I won't leave you alone. Similarly, He protects His people. He says, I will come to your rescue. He says in there, your deliverance will come on Mount Zion. You will be okay. And also in here, I think, one thing that we learn about God is how He opposes the proud. We notice the way that Obadiah talks about the people of Edom. He says, you kind of live up in the mountains. And I think one thing he's saying is your head's kind of in the clouds here. You think you've got it so good. At any moment, you can be wiped out by my hand. He says, you wise people, are you really that wise? Oh, sure, you can step in and take a part in destroying my people, but I'm God. You're not. Here's what's coming toward you. God opposes Edom when they're proud. They're self-righteous. They're saying, oh, look at what's happening to Jacob. Man, that's just how it is for them. But then their self-righteousness becomes their demise. We think about the kingdom language of Jesus Christ, right? He comes onto the scene and he talks about the kingdom. He says the kingdom is within you. He also says when he is actually walking the earth in his earthly ministry, he says the kingdom is among you right now. He becomes the embodiment of the kingdom. He becomes the king. He is the Messiah, the king, the anointed one. And so God's reign through Jesus Christ continues, and now we are participants in that kingdom. And it's a kingdom that offers its allegiance to God, the one who is just, like we see in Obadiah, the one who protects his people, the one who opposes the proud, because remember, he's the king. We're not. And he's the one that calls us to remember to do unto others as you would have them do to unto you. That's what we see with the Edomites. They did not treat Israel in a way that they would want to be treated. And for them, it meant destruction was coming their way. Let's be a people who recognize that our kingdom is one that pledges allegiance to Jesus Christ, the Messiah, and let's live lives that reflect that truth. If there's anybody here today that needs the prayers of this assembly, we'd be so glad to pray with you, for you. And as we always say, if there's anybody here tonight that is ready to put down the Lord in baptism, we'd be so glad to witness you do that and to assist you in that. So whatever need that you have, you can come forward as we stand and sing this song.